For more talks and meditations, go to GloriaKGreen.com. Connect, don't divide. You can do it. So today I thought I would talk about connecting, not dividing. That we can do that. The way we live right now, we find ourselves forming and sharing opinions at the speed of light. And sometimes we get hardened into those opinions and express them forcefully and with certainty, according to Brian Welsh, who's the CEO of Mindful Magazine. You know, in this day of information proliferation and polarized information sources, it's so easy for us to become really rigid in our opinions. After all, we don't read anything that disputes our opinion. We seek out the information sources that tell us what we already think. We become righteous about our opinions, and our conversations turn into debates, just trying to prove our point of view. David Emerald says we cannot listen to be right and listen to connect with an open heart at the same time. We all like to be right. I grew up with praise for being smart, so I thought being right was the way to connect with others. Being right got me ahead at work for a while, but it did not necessarily get me to connect with my coworkers. In the long run, being right was my glass ceiling. I thought I had to project certainty, so much so that I didn't listen to others. I had no curiosity about their ideas or their concerns. At work, it was pretty much my way or the highway. And I kind of looked down on people who didn't agree with me. And because of that, I missed the opportunity to connect with some wonderful people. Another connection story is a friend of mine that I've known since high school has a very different point of view than me. He reads different information sources, some that I've never even heard of. And he'll share contrary points of view with me. And my first instinct was to tell him, don't share that information with me. I don't want to see it. Don't send me that. And I said it in a way that really communicated, I don't want to see that garbage. And much of the time, I wouldn't even look at it. So really, what I was really doing was looking down on him and saying, your point of view is not important to me, and I don't want to see the garbage that you're sending. But then I listened to a podcast on the 10% Happier, where Dan Harris interviews Bill Doherty from Braver Angels. Braver Angels is an organization that tries to help bridge the polarized divide. They put reds and blues together in workshops and teach them how to talk and listen to each other. So after listening to that, I decided to try a different strategy. I actually listened to one of the videos my friend sent me. Then instead of firing off an unskillful response, I practiced noticing what I was feeling, what was going on, and considered some of the other practices that were discussed in that podcast, which we'll get to in a few minutes. And my response, I think, was more skillful. I said, this could be true and it could be false. You and I don't have access to the facts to make that determination. And while he, the speaker on the video, stated his allegations as facts, he did not provide any facts to prove his case. And the reply I got from my friend was a heart emoji. So instead of starting a big argument where we're telling each other you're wrong, we connected again. So now, instead of being irritated with him for sending me videos that I don't agree with, I see him as he really is. I mean, he's someone I can trust to always have my back, and I've always known that. But I wasn't seeing that when he was sending me information that was contrary to my beliefs. The way we speak with others can bring them much joy and happiness, self-confidence, hope, and trust. or it can make them feel separate, unworthy, dumb, or unnecessary. Only we can choose how we want to communicate with others. We can communicate to show how smart we are, or we can communicate to show we care and to connect. But we can't do both at the same time. Speaking to connect takes intention and practice. And if our intention is to connect, we have to begin with deep listening. Mirabai Bush says, when we think we already know what there is to hear, we're simply moving a little too fast to listen. That's where meditation comes in. To listen deeply, you have to start by listening to yourself. Unless we look deeply into ourselves, deep listening is not possible. It won't be easy. It requires us to give up our preconceived ideas, judgments, and desires. Being good at listening requires the ability to listen to how you listen. If you can't recognize your own beliefs and opinions, needs and fears, you won't have enough inner space to really hear. You'll be too preoccupied with keeping yourself to being right. David Rome, a writer for Mindful Magazine, says, like mindfulness itself, listening takes a combination of intention and attention. The intention part is having a genuine interest in the other person, their experiences, views, feelings, and needs. The attention part is being able to stay present, open, and unbiased as we receive the other's words, even when they don't line up with our own ideas or desires. So with intention, we listen deeply, and our intention can't be to judge, criticize, condemn, evaluate, or to respond. That's how we usually listen. Instead, you listen with the purpose of understanding the other person. Where are they coming from? What's it like to be them? Reducing their suffering. They're ranting because they're suffering. And just simply listening to them can reduce their suffering. Or connecting. I really want to connect with this person. So if you're listening deeply, you're really listening with an openness to be changed by what you hear. And that's not how we usually communicate with other people. We usually communicate to change them, not to change ourselves. So there are some intentions that draw us away from deep listening. We want the person to perceive us in a certain way, so we're not really listening to them. We're paying attention to how we're coming across. Or we want the conversation to go in a specific direction, so we miss their cues of what they want to talk about and bring it to where we want to go. Or we might want to fix or control the other person. You know, when my son calls with a problem, I want to fix it. That's not deep listening. He's not calling me to fix his problems. He's calling to connect. And all I have to do is listen. And that's the hardest thing to do, is to just listen and not talk. And then there's, besides intention, there's attention. Just the willingness to be there and share stories. The willingness to sit and listen to whatever he has to say. It's not listening while doing something else, like making dinner or cleaning your house. We can't pay attention when we're preoccupied with our own struggles. So sometimes we have to tell people, I can't listen right now because I'm preoccupied. But you're important to me, so let's talk at another time when I can pay attention. Wanting something also keeps us from paying attention. Sometimes what we want has nothing to do with the other person. We want to go have lunch, or we want to get back to work, or we want something that has nothing to do with them, but we can't be present for them when we're wanting something else. So listening in a non-judgmental way opens up the space and allows us to hear what needs to be done at that moment. It also allows us to hear when it's better not to speak, which is sometimes a hard message for me to receive, especially when I'm talking with my children. But it's not until after we've listened with the intent to understand that we can skillfully respond. There are 5 questions to ask yourself before you open your mouth to speak. The first one is it true? The second one, is it kind? The third, is it beneficial? The fourth, is it necessary? And the fifth, is it the right time? Speaking skillfully means telling the truth without any embellishment. And it's important for us to remember that what we think is the truth could be our own incomplete or erroneous perception. Most of us don't have access to the actual facts, so we need to be careful not to spread the news that we do not know to be certain. We often spread news that we've heard because others have stated their allegations as facts, and we go on and we share those facts when in fact they're just opinions. That's why I'm very cautious of quoting any pundit. If you're speaking skillfully, toxic words will not escape from your lips. We have this habit energy to say poisonous things when we're upset. We have to watch those eye rolls or the sharp sigh that means, duh, that was kind of dumb. Take a moment to see if there's a way you can say what you want to say without pouring gasoline on the fire. Rick Hansen says when people shift away from being snippy, curt, snarky, derisive, or contentious, they usually become stronger communicators. He also says not to squander our interpersonal capital on the short-term gratification of a harsh tone. By using a gentler tone, it reduces the chance that the other person is going to avoid dealing with what you say by shifting attention to how you said it. So focus on presenting it in a way that makes it easier for others to accept. And is it the right time? Well, when emotions are roiling, that's not the right time to get your point across. If it's your emotions, you probably won't speak skillfully. And if it's your communication partner's emotions, they probably aren't ready to listen. It's a lot easier said than done to do these things. I tried for years to improve my communication skills by focusing on listening and speaking skillfully, thinking about these things. But until I started doing some noticing and started practicing some things, my communication skills didn't really improve all that much. So what did I practice noticing? Well, the first thing I had to notice was when I left the conversation, when my mind wandered off. And that's why we meditate, so we can see when we've left the conversation. Because a lot of times you think you're multitasking, but you really left the conversation and you're doing whatever it is you're doing, and then you jump back in. So notice when you've left the conversation. The other thing is notice in the conversation, do I have an agenda? Do I want something or do I not want something? Do I have a very specific agenda for this conversation? Because if I do, I'm probably not going to listen very well. The third thing is to notice what you're feeling inside, because the energy of irritation or anger or fear or other negative feelings pulls us out of the present moment. We can't listen when we're agitated. So what are you feeling inside? Now, this is something I've been practicing lately, and when my husband and I start getting into an argument, I will just tell him I need a few minutes. And it makes such a difference because I'm not saying things that I will regret. So paying attention to what you're feeling inside. and thinking about noticing what's triggering you. Sometimes you're talking with someone and something they say gets you more upset than makes sense. And it's because they're triggering some past baggage. And if you can notice, oh, there it is again, my concern about being rejected or my feeling of not being good enough. And so anything he says is going to tell me I'm not good enough. If I can notice that that's coming up again, then I can be more skillful in my reactions. A couple other things that I practice noticing is notice when you want to be somewhere else. I don't really want to be here talking to you. It becomes very clear to the other person. You know, when you're on the phone and the person goes on and on and on, and finally you're just like, okay, I've had enough. It's really more, you're going to connect better if you say, I need to get off the phone now, or I'd love to talk more to you about this, but now isn't the right time, than to really be sitting there saying, I don't want to be here, because they can feel it. Or when you feel like I don't have enough time for this conversation. You know, my husband's trying to tell me something and I want to get dinner done because I'm hungry. It's not a way to connect through conversation. So Rick Hansen says, be mindful of what's called priming. Feeling already mistreated or annoyed or irritated or already in a critical frame of mind. Little things can land on this priming like a match on a pile of firecrackers, setting them off. And how often does that happen, that our irritation has nothing to do with the person we're speaking with, but we set off those firecrackers? So after I've spent a lot of time noticing, here's a couple of other skills that I've been practicing. First is just silently noting your reactions as they arise. And we do this in meditation. What thought came up? A feeling, a judgment, a memory. Just noting, thinking, feeling angry, daydreaming, and then return your full attention to the conversation. Just like we do to our breath, every time we wander off, we shift our focus back. Listening to understand instead of to respond. Silence can be very awkward, feel very awkward in a conversation, so we feel like we have to be ready to respond the minute they finish talking. Or sometimes we feel like we have to do that because if we don't, someone else will jump in and we won't get our turn. But if we really want to connect with people, we have to really listen to understand what they're saying before we formulate our response. Not taking things personally. A lot of times someone will say something and they don't mean it personally at all, yet we take it that way because we think the whole world is about us. You know, we're the center of the universe. Another thing that keeps us from communicating is being with uncomfortable feelings. If my son calls me and he's venting about something, that's an uncomfortable feeling, having my son not be very happy. And it's hard for me to be with, but I have to practice just being with that feeling so I can just be there for him. Or my daughter or any friend, anyone who might have something uncomfortable that they're telling me about. And then some other communication practices, like finding common ground, which I think I did with my friend by saying, this may be true, it may be false, we don't have the facts. Trying to find something you agree with that person before you go into the disagreement. Another one that I learned from Braver Angels is using I statements instead of truth statements. Because truth statements often come with a comma at the end, dummy, We state our opinions as if they're facts instead of saying, I understand this, or I heard this, or I read this. We say this is the truth when we don't necessarily have access to the facts to know that it's really true. It's what we believe. And then learning to pivot, to say, here's what you're I'm hearing what you're saying. Now would you like to hear my opinion? And giving them the opportunity to say, yes, I would. When you get their permission to give your perspective, they're more likely to listen. Planning your conversation in advance so you don't get triggered. You probably all have people we'll be talking with over the holidays that know how to push our buttons. And if we can plan in advance, we're going to have a better chance of not getting triggered. And I think the biggest one is replacing certainty with curiosity. And this one has been really hard for me, but I don't always have to be right. And I can be curious as to why someone sees something a different way and try and understand. Instead of saying, you're an idiot, how could you possibly think that? I can question what led this person to have these kind of beliefs and to believe this. What is it about their background? What are the causes and conditions? You know, why is it so different? So having a little bit of curiosity to just try and understand where they're coming from goes a long way in connecting. We all know it's in our best interest to connect instead of divide. It takes an intention to connect, noticing what's truly happening in the present moment, and practicing skills that make us more skillful speakers. Remember, you can't connect with an intention to show that you're right, but you can communicate to connect. As my 5.5-year-old granddaughter, Sadie, wrote in a sign for her front window, you can do it.